Are you much of a dreamer? Do you have dreams a lot? I have really weird ones. I mean, and most of the time they don't have any relevance to anything in the world that I'm doing. You know, it's just I'm off doing something completely tangential, and I don't normally get up and scratch my head and say, what is the deeper meaning of that dream? Sometimes it's one too many glasses of wine or one too many tacos or one too many something, and I'm having a weird dream. Well, I, in preparing for this sermon, had a really weird dream. And I was thinking, does this have relevance on what I'm preaching about today? And it does in a very tangential way, so you get to hear it. So, I'm having this dream, and it's in a car dealership. And there are two boys and two men, and their wives come in later. And so there's this contest that the boys have to create a sculpture, and if they create the sculpture that is good enough, they win a sports car. Now the kids could care less about that, but the fathers are totally into it. Now the kids are supposed to make up the sculpture, okay, and they start in on it, but the fathers who are observing it to begin with aren't real happy with the result. And in fact, they don't think they're going to get the sports car if the child is left alone to create the sculpture on their own. And so they help. Each one helps their son. And they come, and so when the sculpture is done, they're both really cool. And the dealer comes in and he thinks something is up. This is not a sculpture that a child would do. And he starts asking questions to the kids, and each one of the fathers is jumping in and saying, well, yeah, my son did this all by himself, and the other one said, no, he didn't do it at all. You helped him. Well, you helped your kid too. And a big argument ensues. The women, the wives of these two guys, come in after watching this whole argument going on, and they're going, you both cheated on this completely. You didn't let the kids do what they were supposed to do. You both cheated. Now we have to clean up this mess. The women clean up the mess of the sculpture, and they drive off in the sports car together, leaving the men behind. Pretty good one, huh? When people talk about what God is saying to the church today, the rhetoric is always amazing to me. The rhetoric normally says when a minister, and normally it's a white guy in a conservative church who's telling his people what God is saying to them, says what the God is going to say today, it's the most amazing things come out of their mouth. Someone has said, and it's been in the news recently, has proclaimed our president is the vengeful actor of God and is perfectly in his right to smite North Korea. Amazing to me that a Christian minister would one, pick out a politician to be the vengeful actor of God, of righteousness, and then to say that a whole group of people deserve death. When I was in college and heading into seminary, it was at the end of the 20th century. We're talking about the early 80s on, and there was a great influx at that time of people thinking that the world was coming to an end, Christian communities in particular, and they were looking at the tea leaves of history and politics in particular around themselves to say that God is acting in this way, and a lot of them they were saying that. Coming out of evangelical churches, charismatic ones in particular, that the world is going to hell in a handbasket. The Soviet Union, we all know, was going to take over the world, and if they didn't drop the nukes on us, something terrible was going to happen. And if that happened, the moment that was going to happen, before it happened, Jesus was going to come back, lift us all up into the space, and save us from the annihilation of the world around us. And I was really kind of upset by that on several different levels. One, I was upset on it because of just the catastrophe to humanity. You know, that only the select group was good enough for God and everybody else was going to be decimated. That really bothered me. The other thing that bothered me about it was that God didn't like time that much. And my time was running out. I was born at this point. that my life was going to be truncated because of cosmic events that I had no control over. But man, people really were really into it. And it's not the first time that's been the case. People are often in congregations are looking to say, what is God wanting us to do in the world? You know, and really for the most part, every sermon is an opportunity that the preacher has to say, this is what God is doing in the world, and this is our response to it. So it's not like I just came up with this out of the top of my head and we're going to talk about one time. You'll hear it over and over again. You'll probably hear it most every sermon. What I have found, though, is that when people, primarily white male ministers, put on their I'm talking about God hat, they normally do it in a very judgmental way. They don't talk about it in an expansive way that God's action in the world is expanding out and the goodness of God is raining down on all of humanity and that God wants us all to live together in harmony and to strive together to make a better world. No, they're not saying that. Normally they're saying our little group has the keys to the kingdom and we got to hold on to those things really, really tight. Because all those people out there are trying to get them from us. And really, we're lucky that God is on our side because the world outside is a mean, awful place with people in there that we don't particularly like. And thank God we have Jesus to keep them away from us. Those are dangerous words. Because people don't like to live with ambiguity. They end up on this kind of suspended ladder or bridge that you see before you. Afraid to move too much because it may start shaking or moving or oscillating or anything else in life. And we don't really like oscillating life. We would rather have things set and secure and not deal with the problems with life that come our way. I'd like to stand on solid ground all the time. But the world that we live in is not solid. It may be solid under our feet, but politically it certainly isn't. And socially it's always in the move. And periodically, problems that we think were solved come back to us to say that they weren't. I mean, racism right now is front and center again. It's like it just goes away and keeps coming back. You know, you just can't seem to knock that thing out. And those folks in the South who want to take down those Confederate monuments, boy, what is wrong with them? Well, let me tell you a little bit about the Confederate monuments of the South. The Confederate monuments of the South were not there until like 50 years after the Civil War. Because it was in about that time, around 1910 to 1920, was the time that white Democrats finally recaptured the South. Recaptured it in a way that put the last nails in the restoring of the South that the Republicans had put in place after the end of the Civil War. And at that point, they had pushed African Americans and every other social group that they disagreed with to the fringes to the point with so that they couldn't vote anymore, so they couldn't have any kind of representation within their local state bodies or even within their towns. And at that point, they started putting up monuments to say that we were really right. We were really right. Lee and Richmond and all those things, we were really right. We just got on the wrong side of a little bit of history, but we were really right. And so that all the people who saw those monuments who had been disenfranchised, they were reminded over and over and over again who was in power and who had the voice and that they didn't. And so when people start talking about saving monuments that represent a specific period of time, we need to be very careful what they represent. It's the same thing that we have noticed in California just recently in the last number of years about the beatification of Junipero Serra, the man who established all the missions up and down the coast. Well, if you read the mission's story or the saga, there are a lot of First Nation people who ended up being grist for the mill, whose lives were upended, who were enslaved to build these buildings, whose turn of events was what I would call less than favorable. It's amazing that the world we live in is filled with stories like that, of that pain, of that suffering, But what is God saying about that? Rather than drawing lines in the sand and saying that this is the way the past is and this is the way the future should be and this is the way that we should live in an upfront and violent manner, I think God is saying something completely different. Do you realize that more people in the world today are living in peace than have ever lived in the world before? Do you know that? More people in the world live in peace than at any other time in world history. Right now, today. We wouldn't know that by looking at the news at all. Also, people in the world have more economic capital today than they've ever had in their life. There are plenty of places in the world where people don't have self-determination and really can't make up their mind of what they want to do. But overall, the majority of the world now has the motivation and the ability to do things that they have never been able to do before. We don't celebrate that at all. We talk about all the ills that are in the world. We talk about all of the things that are driving the world, in a sense, to the right or to the left. But we don't talk about what's really going on in the world. I believe, as a person of faith, that God is making a difference in people's lives today because God is calling us in this place to love in an unconditional way that we've never had to love before. When we look at the world around us and we recognize the hurt that is out there, when we recognize the things that are happening around us and we theologize, we think, what is God doing here? I am reminded of the person of Paul who says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. I'm reminded of Jesus of Nazareth who went out in a turbulent time and said, you know, really the essence of human life is to love one another in a deeper level, to be a part of other people's lives in ways that might hurt you on the outset because you don't fully understand them, but once you get to know them, once you understand their journey, once you empathize with what has been put upon them or put aside, you may see God in their eyes. And it was even more forthright than that. Jesus said, you will see God. Blessed are the poor. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are those who persecute you because you will see the action of God before you. I think my dream was pretty magnanimous about the way that the world really works, doesn't it? People are arguing about the way the world should be, and periodically someone has to pick up the mess and clean it up and drive the car away. I think that's what we're doing today in the world as far as Christianity is concerned. It's not the most popular thing to do on a Sunday morning, I'll give you that. But those of us who have hung around and have cleaned up the mess, we're driving to a new destination. And we are willing to call the people who play the game unfairly, who stick themselves into situations to better themselves, we can see what it really is, can't we? And it's really up to us not to just call it, but to get our hands into it and to clean it up. And to say that, you know, we are going to a new destination. We are doing something important here. We are seeing God in the world. And it doesn't matter if there are 4 of us or 100 of us or 1,000 of us who see it. We are seeing it. And as we see that, we can say that God is alive in the world, that God is moving in the world. And no, it doesn't matter what befalls us, we have been companioned by God. And that we are not alone, and that God is making a difference in our lives. That's what I think God's doing in our congregation. That's what I think God's doing in the world. And I think the world needs to hear a little bit more about that. Will you pray with me? We have been called to service, God. We have been called to see the world as Christ has. We've been called to not be ashamed of the gospel. We have been called to understand the hurt that is around us and to offer a balm for it. We've been called to hear the words that disenfranchise people and offer something else. words that say have the use of beloved in them, words that make a difference for the people in communities that feel disenfranchised. We have been given arms and feet, God, to act on your behalf in the world. And we ask, God, that we would hear your voice, that we would see your action, that you would equip us to do your work as you speak to us in this congregation. Amen.